A new state auditor sworn in. Why was it done in a private ceremony? Droned out. How Indiana lost its bid to be a drone testing site. Mike Pence on political decisions in 2014. A call for mandatory sentences in gun crimes and Andy Jacobs remembered. That plus the New Year celebration in Vincennes and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 3, 2014.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, Republican Suzanne Crouch took the oath of office to become the new state auditor. The former state representative from Evansville was sworn in during a private ceremony in the governor's office. A small crowd of staff people in the media were the only witnesses. It's a big contrast to the public ceremony held last August for former auditor Dwayne Sawyer. Sawyer left office for unexplained personal reasons. Here is Suzanne Crouch, followed by the governor.
I'm a big believer that everything happens for a reason and that what's meant to be is meant to be, and it was meant to be that I do this, and I welcome the challenge and the opportunity to serve the people of Indiana.
Having a ceremony with her here in this office today was the most appropriate way for us to have a seamless transition.
Why the understated start for Suzanne Crouch? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, can you recall a statewide elected official taking office in such a low-key fashion in the past?
No. There have got to be, you know, maybe one or two reasons for that. Obviously, he didn't want any film footage of this appointment craters like the last one did. Or, you know, when you have an auditor, you would hope that given the kinds of mistakes that we've had fiscally from the Republican administrations in the last few years, you'd have somebody that would stand up and say, there's $500 million missing, or, you know, we can't approve this tax cut without a way of paying for it, or something along those lines. But when he was handing her the rubber stamp, he probably didn't want that on camera either.
Well, the media was there.
Oh, I see. But you don't have a lot of film footage from it, do you? You don't have him up there with the oath and the whole thing in the background like you did with Dwayne.
It is a little unusual.
Actually, no. Secretary of State Connie Lawson didn't have a big swearing-in ceremony. Hers was in the governor's office as well. But, you know, I think this actually makes a lot of sense. Suzanne Crouch is a no-nonsense, roll-up-your-sleeves, hard-working person, and she just wants to get in there and get the job done, and it makes a lot of sense for her. It really highlights kind of the leader that she is.
That may be the case, but the contrast here is interesting. The fact that you do the big public ceremony for Dwayne Sawyer and then 4 months later do something different says something, doesn't it?
Well, I think you can read something into it, as you have, and I think you're right. You know, it's sort of, when you get married for the first time, you usually have a big wedding with a lot of pomp and a lot of ceremony. And
I did.
You did. Then when I go to the second part of this question, you'll have to fall out, because as far as I know, you've only done it once.
Well, that's true.
But if you get married a second time, you have, you know, you go downtown maybe to the Justice of the Peace or to the courts. And if you get married a third time, you're probably going to Vegas and the Elvis Chapel eloping. My point being, what does Elvis Chapel have to do? I'm only one time. I don't know. This is what I hear.
The governor's office to the Justice.
No,
of the
I'm
Peace.
Suggesting that when an event
or the chapel and Elvis, chapel.
It has lost some of its pizzazz.
Yeah.
And actually, in this regard, not has it only lost some of its pizzazz, but that's intentional, as you point out, Jim.
Yeah.
You don't want to have a bunch of a balloon drop, effectively, and I'm using that term figuratively, not literally. When it could conceivably shine a spotlight on the fact that your vetting process might not have been up to snuff the first time around. And in fact, the governor said that he's changed the vetting process as a result of the first pick.
Would a public ceremony for the second time in a little over 4 months have given Democrat Mike Clater a campaign issue to work with?
Well, yeah, because it would have provided the visual that he could have then pulled and said, look, they didn't get it right the first time. Let's hope they got it right the second time, but I'm the right guy, whatever he wants to do. So, yeah, I think that there's some of that. But I do think that what Jennifer says is true. I think that Suzanne Crouch is a much lower key profile person. And I do think that once bitten, twice shy, it had to be going through the governor's office, or governor's mind. So you avoid all of that problem. It allows her to get down to work, fix the problems that occurred because of the last time around, and then move forward from that.
And I don't think you'd want something public. From all intents and purposes, people in the legislature like her, and mm-hmm. they think she's an independent person and she's a responsible legislator.
Right.
But her qualifications don't stack up to Mike Clater's. She's not a CPA. She's not a lawyer.
She's a former county auditor.
County auditors. She's worked with local government. She's served on Ways and Means, and that's the most important credential, because the county auditor credential is not a credential that provides for the kind of responsibility you have as the statewide auditor.
In interviews after taking the oath, she said that when she became county auditor, she found after she got in office that it was the most important office at the county level, and she said that she might find that to be the case with state auditor. Did she misspeak?
Well, I think that she is passionate about, the importance of the work, and she is extremely qualified and maybe is upset because she knows that she will be a very strong candidate and very difficult to beat next year.
I'm not upset about that at all,
she takes it very seriously, and everyone knows her, knows she has a strong work ethic, and so honestly I do think the ceremony it just kind of symbolizes her approach to things, and she just wants to get things done.
I think that's good that she's serious about it, and hopefully she'll develop the credentials that'll qualify her for the office while she's in there. That's good.
I think we'll have a race for auditor for a change. That'll be unusual. Indiana will not be one of the states to test drones. Ohio and Indiana teamed up in an effort to stage tests at places that included Camp Atterbury. This week, the FAA announced 6 official testing sites in an effort to get regulations in place by 2015. They are Alaska, Nevada, New York, North Dakota, Virginia, and Texas. Ron George will lead the research at Texas A&M.
This is a Kitty Hawk moment in the history of aviation. That integration of unmanned aircraft is the next big step. And Texas A&M University Corpus Christi is going to be right there in the middle of it.
Now, it's not well known, but this Indiana state government had created an office to try to pursue this bid. Jennifer Hollowell, is this a big loss?
Well, I don't want to drone on about this, but it was a very competitive process. And, the FAA said that they were looking to achieve diversity in both climate and geography. And, frankly, there were a lot of people who were shocked that California wasn't one of the states that was selected. But, at the end of the day, the partnership that exists, the Indiana-Ohio Center, is going to continue to work on private and government-related projects like this. So I think that that's, the important point moving forward.
Not quite a year ago, we had a discussion here about a bill in the General Assembly talking about state regulations on drones, and everybody kind of joked about it and made fun of it. But now you've got Amazon talking about drone deliveries.
I think you need the regulations on drones. I think that the bill that was in the legislature the last time wasn't really designed to regulate the drones. It was designed to make sure that nobody knew what was going on in these, what do they call them, feeding something lots?
It was separate from what's known as the ag-gag bill.
I think it was a spillover on the ag-gag is the way I thought, I interpreted it.
There were concerns about cameras on drones that might invade people's privacy.
And that was the concern, and that was the focus of that. I think this is a developing area, and it's really a loss for Indiana that we didn't get the project. It really is.
Well, there seems to be a growing consensus that there's a need for drone regulations. Should that be left to the federal government, or should states be involved?
Well, it is the federal government's call. And, I think that's where this whole process is driven by the requirement by 2015 to have these regulations in place. And these test sites are going to be used to help develop those regulations. And that's where Indiana loses in its inability to be part of those testing sites, because if you're one of those sites, you gain the benefit of the research that you generate, you gain the benefit of the jobs that are created by the research, and you also have a leg up on the competition when it comes to integrating these drones into the airspace. And that's essentially what we're talking about, is drones by after 2015 are going to be regulated by the federal government, or at least are scheduled to be regulated by the federal government, and they will be flying in and out all around, and by not being one of the test sites, we miss an early entry into that and all the benefits that go with being in there first.
I think that's a very good assessment. This is probably would have been a bigger deal in terms of the aerospace industry for the state and the region than, say, the United Airlines maintenance hub, which was greeted with much fanfare. What year was that? Maybe around late 80s, 90s?
1990 or
90s. And granted, it was bringing a lot of jobs, high, well-paying jobs up front, but the industry changed, and so did that facility. This would have set the stage, as John suggests, for a lot of big things. But I do think the state and the administration deserve credit for taking a pretty compelling approach by teaming up with Ohio together. I thought, I'm very surprised that they didn't get it together, because you'd have the sort of hub there in near Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, which is the Air Force Research Lab. That's an existing hub of activity. So, I mean, there seemed to be, and there's a real aerospace corridor for research from the Glenn Propulsion Labs up in Cleveland on down through Crane. It just seemed as if it would have made a lot of sense.
Kitty Hawk moment, Ron George said. It's something of a Jetsons.
Well, it's also something of a highly political moment. I think these choices were made as much on politics as they were on practicality, because, as John points out, that site is not unparalleled, and it made a lot of a very compelling site.
But the thing that makes it so particularly appealing is it's not an existing. It's something in the future that we know is going to develop into a lot more, and now we're right.
And if I'm not mistaken, a lot of the existing overseas drone work is actually operated out of Springfield, Ohio, which is exactly where this would have. You have the people who are already flying them offshore who would have been around maybe to offer some advice and guidance.
Moving on. We're in the new year, a year when there will be pressure on Governor Mike Pence to make a decision on his political plans. Will he run for re-election, or will he pursue a bid for the White House? This is from an interview conducted at the end of last year. Will you make a decision on that front next year?
I don't know if I'll make a decision on that front next year, but I can tell you that I really haven't spent one second thinking about anything other than the job I was hired to do a year ago.
John Katzenberger, do you read anything into that response?
You know, you could, but I'm going to willfully not, because I think the governor's last part of that sentence is most important. He was elected to do the job, and I think he needs to focus on that, and I think he will. You know, we see the cycle, and the cycle's always turning for presidential politics, and people who get in early don't seem to do very well at the end. So I think if you're looking at it objectively from his perspective, you know, there's all the groundwork, blah, blah, blah. But if he wants to get in, let's make it at the end of this cycle, because Indiana needs him to be fully engaged here.
There's been talk already. Fox News at one point reported that he is looking to run for president, but certainly he's not.
Well, there may be some wishful thinking. I mean, keep in mind, he has done very well in conservative straw polls in the past with CPAC and others. So he's a known commodity, a respected commodity from factions, the conservative factions of the party. So I'm not surprised that there would be talk about it. But as John suggests, to get in now, you're taking a big gamble, because you basically proclaim yourself de facto lame duck.
As governor 1 year into your
term. I mean, and even if you somehow decided later on, okay, the presidency, the White House lost some of its allure.
Yeah.
You can't reverse and tell Hoosiers, well, I you know, that was a dalliance, but I'm back with you now. And I lost my mind there temporarily.
But if you're in his position, you don't want to quash any talk like that, right?
Well, I mean, I do think, first of all, he's very focused on Indiana, and he's laid out a bold agenda for the next couple of years, including early childhood education, infrastructure, you know, matching employer needs with job seekers, vocational training, all those sorts of things. I think there's no question that his focus is here. You know, I mean, it's great for us that our governor, again, is looked at from many people in hopes that he'll run for president. I don't think it's a decision that he has to make anytime soon. So, you know, I think he's smart to stay focused on things as he is here.
If you're Mike Pence, do you go to school on Mitch Daniels and observe that talking about running for president might give you more power in the state?
Well, I think he wants to run for president. I think he's always viewed the governorship of Indiana as a stepping stone. He's been in Washington. He wants to go back to Washington. He has no interest in the state of Indiana other than to check off the Tea Party agenda to improve his credentials to run for president. He knows that nobody from Congress has been elected president since never.
I was going to say, Gerald Ford was appointed.
No, he was appointed. I don't think anybody has been elected from Congress, and he knows that.
That's ridiculous.
So he wants to do that, and he wants to speculate about that. But, you know, his focus from the beginning has never been Indiana.
But if your theory is right.
I don't think he does it yet.
Well, I was going to say, if your theory is right, you lose it by doing it now and saying.
You wait a couple of years, but you go to every speech you're invited to, and you hold yourself out as just trying to do the job he's elected to, and then you make a
beeline. But he's not out there chasing this. I mean, he's clearly very focused.
No.
Indiana.
No,
yeah,
he's
absolutely.
Not. He's clearly focused on Washington, as he has been his whole career.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, what should Mike Pence do? Your choices are A, run for re-election, B, run for president, or C, run away. Last week's question was, will 2014 be a Republican year in Indiana or a Democratic year? 46% said Republican, 54% said Democratic. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. State Senator Jim Merritt will introduce new legislation in the 2014 General Assembly aimed at repeat violent offenders. It calls for 5 extra years in prison for repeat offenders who use a firearm to commit a new crime. Merritt pointed out that one of the suspects in the recent home invasions had already served time, and a teen convicted in the 2010 summer celebration shootings is already facing new charges. Merritt says we need to strengthen penalties against those who use a firearm to commit violent crimes.
It's time to really put our very best foot forward, and so people aren't fearful in their homes. 80% of the individuals who commit these crimes have committed them before, and obviously they need to be in the criminal justice system longer than they are now.
John Schwanis, is that a good idea?
I'm not equipped to tell you if it's a good idea. I can tell you politically, I think it, on the surface, first blush would seem to be a slam dunk because of the high-profile crimes that have taken place here on the north side. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of concern. You take the next breath, though, and it does start to splinter along some non-traditional political lines because you do have gun rights advocates who, in some cases, in other states, I don't know if they've gotten into this particular debate here yet, but they have said that you could have law-abiding people who happen to end up in the wrong place at the wrong time with a gun, and then
to be a felon accused of a new crime.
It's the 20 years is probably, I mean, the other difficulty, of course, is the financial aspect of it.
Well, but what's most interesting to me is that we're in the middle of a big rewrite of the criminal code with regard to sentences, and he's kind of coming in from left field here, isn't he?
Well, that's because we just had that new bill passed in the last legislature. Bringing in a new proposal would seem to be a little late. I get what he's trying to do, and I think it makes some sense because, you know, there are crimes and then there are crimes, and this falls in that there are really bad crimes, and they should be punished appropriately. But it seems like the timing was last year and not this year.
Although keep in mind there were some late arrivals to the party last year. I mean, this was something that had been worked out.
Well, they did delay implementation. They're still working on it.
Need to work on it. The problem is the code already provides for accelerating the sentences in the event of either serious
crime. Right?
Well, no. I mean, you in certain crimes you jump up from a B to an A if either serious bodily injury occurs or a weapon is used in the first place, and you have the habitual felony as well. What's ironic about this is if he's not even asking the question is how these felons got the guns. Okay, and if he wants to do something about crime, which I think is a great idea, why don't we do something about the gun shows where people can walk in and simply walk out with weapons no matter how many times they've been.
The majority of guns used in these crimes are guns that you get on the street and in the back of cars.
Where do they come from? They come out of the gun shows. Certainly
they
do. That's why we have more crime here than proportionately than Chicago or New York. That's what's offensive about this.
Well, there is a problem there. The question is, how do you address it?
Well, first of all, I think that I applaud Senator Merritt for doing this and also point out, I think Speaker Bosma is the sponsor in the House, so I think that that's a good sign for this legislation. I know that Mayor Ballard has been talking with legislators for the last couple of months, asking them to pursue something like this. as a part of a broader strategy to address violent crime. And the challenge is, you know, and this increases, I think it's to 20 years.
Mandatory
minimum for commission of a crime, using a gun in commission of a crime with these priors. And the challenge is...
With how many priors?
The challenge is...
I think one felony.
Like, with the example of the Summer Celebration shooter, you know, he was sentenced to 8 years, he served two, and shortly after he got out, he was arrested again and was involved in a police chase with guns and ammunition and ski masks in a car. And the problem is there are too many violent offenders like this who are going into the system not for very long, getting out. I think they know that they're not going to serve very long.
The other part of the problem here, in particular in Indiana, in Indianapolis, is the murder rate. And the murder rate is a function of two things. It's the availability of the weapons and the lack of police on the street. And we have both problems here.
Will help with this because 80% of the people, if you look at last year's murders in Indiana, 80% of them have prior arrests.
You mentioned Chicago and held it up as a comparison for Indianapolis. But that could be a little bit dangerous for your argument because Rahm Emanuel, the Democratic mayor of Chicago, has been begging for, in this case, 3-year mandatory enhancement Illinois legislature.
My
point is it's not a Republican.
No, but when you look at what's happened to the murder rate in Chicago, and the murder rate in New York is 9 times lower than it used to be, and we are close to being half of what we're better than a third of what the murder rate in New York is, and there's 7 or 8 or 9 times our population. Something is particularly wrong here. And what I'm suggesting to you, that something is the availability of the guns and lack of police on the streets.
Would have been in prison, likely, instead of committing...
It's true everywhere.
That's true everywhere.
Why is it higher here is the issue.
Moving on. Former Indiana Congressman Andy Jacobs was remembered this week as an uncommon politician. Jacobs represented Indianapolis in Congress for 30 years before he retired in 1997. He was also an attorney and an author and a former state legislator. He died at the age of 81. Ann Delaney, what will Andy Jacobs be best remembered for?
Well, I think, he was a unique politician in the sense that he wasn't ever a politician. He didn't really campaign or raise money or do any of the things that campaigns are marked by now.
Didn't take money from political action committees.
He didn't do any of that. He lived a very simple, common life. So he didn't get caught up in the trappings of power or anything else. He never traded on the office that he had. He's always been a model that's more of a throwback to a prior century.
I appreciated the fact that he never bought TV commercials. He'd buy a half hour of airtime on the night before Election Day and do a call-in show and talk about issues.
Did your management feel the same way about that?
I didn't mind selling a half hour of time.
Yeah, how about the rest of it?
Yeah.
But, I mean, by all accounts, I mean, he's a great man and a true public servant, you know, a Marine. And so I think it's great that he was honored this way. And he's the kind of leader that a lot of people can come around and, he garnered a lot of admiration and respect.
Rare funeral at the State House today.
Wonderful person for all the reasons that have been mentioned. Just sort of the way politics should be. Should unfold with free, largely of money influence and with a sort of a willingness to laugh at oneself. Indiana lawmakers, we had a show once devoted during a long session when we ran out of other topics to political humor and sort of the colorful side of politics and was it as colorful as it used to be. And he was a guest and it was one of my favorite shows because of the stories he had to tell and the joke. Just a great personality, bigger than life, really.
Told great stories, and I'm grateful for the chance to have heard several of those stories. But I think Congressman Andre Carson said it really well today at his service at the State House. He said that what Andy Jacobs represented, and I think Ann described it very well, and the fact that even the opponents that he had were not enemies, they were just people who had different points of view. Could go a long way in Congress today. And so I think he represented the best of what public service meant. And if somebody could take an example from that, that'd be terrific.
He would have an annual dinner with all of his opponents. He would invite them to his house. It's pretty unusual.
And until you'd seen him walk in a parade with those dogs of his, that was a sight to behold. I mean, big man, big dogs.
Finally, the New Year celebration in Vincennes won national attention this week. That celebration featured the annual watermelon drop and live coverage on CNN. There were fireworks and watermelons dropping at midnight Watermelon smashing comedian Gallagher was there to help entertain the crowd. The city started the watermelon drop in 2008 in honor of Knox County's many melon farms. Jennifer Hollowell, will that kind of attention cause other communities to imitate Vincennes?
I hope so. It'd be great. It'd be great. I think it's fabulous. And frankly, I grew up watching Gallagher a lot, and so I'm sorry I missed it. But you know, it
and
looked like a lot of fun.
And now you're a political strategist. What does that tell
you? I know.
This must be an Indiana thing, because David Letterman was doing this back 30 years ago on his old show, dropping various pieces of equipment, machinery, televisions.
Oh, and then you had Dan Burton with the melon in the back.
Oh, my.
Happy New Year.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.